Michael. We're so glad you've chosen GoldSeek as a trusted investing information source. Today's special guest, Peter Schiff. This week, the European Union is somewhat less unified on news that Greece might leave the Union. They rejected a bailout plan this week to assuage its debtors. Joining me to discuss this topic and just what it might mean for investors' portfolios, Peter Schiff, chairman of Schiff Gold. Welcome back, Peter Schiff.
Well, thanks for having me back on.
Jump right into this Greek drama. On Friday, the EU finance ministers failed to reach an amicable solution in the negotiations between Greece and its creditors. Greek officials subsequently rejected the bailout plan this week in Brussels. Currently, only about 2 weeks remain for that bailout program. The impasse is probably exposing a lot of the debt in that nation to default. Do you expect Greece to default and reject the euro altogether, maybe even try to return to the drachma?
I don't know what they're going to do, but it is a Greek tragedy. The mistake originally was the bailout in the first place several years ago. They should never have bailed Greece out because the bailout simply involved extending more credit to a bankrupt nation. And so Greece is in worse shape now as a result of the last round of bailouts. And so if you continue to bail them out, the cost of doing it will, you know, grow in perpetuity because as the bailouts actually prevent any kind of structural reform because they allow the Greeks to kick the can down the road. And, you know, everybody thinks that it's going to be disaster for the Eurozone if Greece leaves. Well, it's a much bigger disaster if Greece stays and Europe caves into their demands for more money because it's going to be a never-ending cycle and the moral hazard is going to spread to other countries who are going to expect the same treatment. They need to do what they should have done years ago, and that is stop the bailouts. Or at least demand real structural reforms and cuts in government spending, which is the opposite of what Greece wants to do. Greece wants it to increase the size of government and take on more debt. And that's the last thing that Greece needs, and it's the last thing that Europe needs to finance.
There's been a bit of an ironic twist here, I think. The weakest nation in the EU was once the textbook example of currency stability. For about 700 years, the silver drachma was the benchmark for silver-backed currencies, including the pound sterling, the original U.S. dollar. Obviously, the pain would be intense initially if they leave the Union. But don't you agree that Greece could emerge a more sound economy as a result?
Well, it depends on what they do. I do believe that if they leave the Union, the pain is going to be much worse in the short run because I think they're going to have to suffer through a huge devaluation of the renewed drachma. They go back to that. Big inflation, cost of living go way up, the standard of living go way down. And then the Greeks are going to have to, impose austerity on themselves. And maybe it'll be more tolerable if it comes from Athens than from Brussels or from, Germany. But that's what's going to have to be done. And, the Greeks that are now in power were elected on a real socialist, Marxist-type platform. And that's not what's going to save Greece. I mean, if Greece is going to survive on its own, it's going to have to be because it returns to a free, more capitalist. Because you can't really dig yourself out of this hole, with government shovels. You've got to do it with market-based solutions. And right now, the Greeks are not leaning in that direction. But maybe the shock and awe of an exit from the Eurozone and the economic turmoil that will unleash in Greece might be enough to cause a change in direction.
I think there's another component of this story. Analysts are noting that a Greek exit could mark the beginning of the end for the European Union, at least in its current state. One source noted that the Greek government debt could essentially lead to massive losses across the continent there. And I'd like to know what your feelings are with regard to maybe the northern states banding into like a brick-like composite and leaving the periphery nations on their own to fend for themselves. Any thoughts?
The idea that the euro is stronger with Greece than without it doesn't make any sense. Greece really didn't meet the criteria, and it's already a disaster. Why the whole experiment is dependent on keeping Greece in the family doesn't make any sense at all. The union is stronger, not weaker. I mean, the idea is that it's going to be the first domino to fall. That might be the shock treatment that Spain or Italy need to start to get their house in order so that they don't get kicked out too. Because I don't think it's going to be a great experience that everybody's going to want to emulate. But, you know, there is a big problem with trying to make this currency work, because it doesn't fit with the motivations of politicians who are trying to spend lots of money they don't have to buy votes. And so it's not necessarily going to work. And it would work better maybe if the countries sharing the euro currency, you know, were fewer in number, if Austria and the Netherlands and Denmark or Finland, there's some of the stronger currency countries were the ones that stayed in, and it would be a lot more workable. But you never know. As again, maybe a Greek exit, Brexit, whatever they're calling it, will have the opposite effect that people expect. Rather than causing other countries to leave, it might cause other countries to get their act together.
Well, you'd probably agree, though, that the ECB is just simply not as unified and ubiquitous as the Federal Reserve. They don't have the same monetary powers, and that seems to be a hindrance here.
Well, that we are going to suffer dramatically. I mean, talking about this whole idea of nation borrowing more money, we're Greece. There, but for the ECB, goes to the United States, or maybe not the ECB, Chinese Central Bank or the Japanese Central Bank or the banks that have been throwing their good money after our bad. Greece owes a lot of money, and the people who loan Greece money are going to suffer losses. But the losses are greater because that's the same situation with the United States. We're broke. We're as broker than Greece, and they pretend for solvent. But it's all in tough. We're no more good for our debts than Greece is for its. But it's just that our creditors haven't come to that realization yet, so they're still willing to lend us money despite the fact that we can't pay it back. And they're still willing to charge us next to nothing as interest, because next to nothing is all we can afford. Because the debt is so large, if our creditors actually demanded a reasonable rate of return, we would have to default. Spare us that embarrassment, or to spare themselves that admission, they continue to allow interest rates to be practically so that we can pretend that we can afford the debt that we can't repay.
Summarize what you're getting at here. I mean, the United States, we just don't allow the pain to come to pass. It doesn't come to fruition. And as a result, we're just kicking the can further and further down the road, postponing the day of reckoning. But eventually, you know, we could find ourselves in just a similar predicament as Greece. It's inevitable.
Well, we will. We're doing the same mistakes that created Greece, created the United States. It's just that Greece is a much smaller scale. And so the problems blow up quicker because Greece does not have the reserve currency that it can just issue at will. You know, we're pulling off the same scam, but on a bigger population, and so it's going on for longer. And, of course, we've been doing this even longer than Greece. I mean, Greece's credit binge began with its inclusion into the Eurozone, because once they got the right that the ECB was going to cash, they went to town in Greece with all sorts of promises and all sorts of freebies and deficits. Well, we've been doing that for a lot longer than Greece, and our bill is a lot bigger, and a lot more people are going to lose a lot more money when we finally have to come to terms with the problem. But just like with Greece, the longer we can extend and pretend, right, the bigger the problem that we don't want to acknowledge gets, and the worse ultimately it's going to be when we have to deal with it. Now, the question is Europe going to deal with the Greek problem now, or are they going to make it bigger and deal with it later?
Well, I'd like to direct the discussion back across the pond to our domestic economy. Now, you've shown recently that without the government deflator manipulation, our gross domestic product, or national output, strength would be considerably lower than advertised, if you will. You say the Fed will eventually be forced, maybe, to restart QE stimulus, and they just can't take a chance at raising rates. Tell us why, please.
Well, you know, it's amazing that people still haven't figured this out. We're going to get the Fed minutes today. And, you know, meanwhile, all the economic data that's earlier today, earlier in the week, last week, is bad. Anybody that data can see the U.S. economy is rapidly decelerating. You know, the 5% growth we had in Q3, originally reported for Q4 at 2.6, based on the data since that release, they're going to downwardly revise it, maybe even below 2%. Thus far, the data that's coming in for Q1 means we could be in the ones. So we're rapidly approaching a recession, yet everybody is marching to the drumbeat of everything is great. The Fed's going to raise rates. The U.S. economy is improving. It seems like everybody is waiting for the Federal Reserve to acknowledge what should already be obvious, that the U.S. economy is rapidly depleting, that they can't raise rates. In fact, they are preparing another dose of QE. That is what is going to happen to keep the U.S. out of recession, a recession that it badly needs, but of course a recession that the central bank will not allow to take place. And the Wall Street still hasn't figured this out, that you can never end the stimulus. All the people who think that the Fed succeeded in growing the economy, they're wrong. They just succeeded in inflating a bubble. And the air is already coming out of that bubble right now. And if they want to maintain the illusion, they need to blow it back up with air. And the only way they can do that is to do another round of QE, which is what they're going to do. The question is, when will everybody figure out that that's what they're going to do? And when they do it, will they figure out the game? Will they understand that it is QE infinity, that there is no real economic growth? We have to settle for a bubble because that's the closest thing to growth we can get without allowing a real recession to restructure the economy, which none of the central bankers will allow because of the short-term pain that's going to mean for all the players that have been involved in the bubble.
Take a look at the inflation debate. The deflationists just have it inverted. We have multiple central banks that have absolutely only one panacea to offset lower prices. Axel Merck likes to point out, if we didn't have a central bank cabal, you could have devastating deflation like we saw in the 30s.
Deflation of the 1930s, what you had was a bubble in the 1920s, the latter half of the 1920s, that was inflated by the Fed keeping interest rates too low. That bubble burst, and it was a very healthy process. The reason we had a depression, because the government interfered and prevented the market from working the same way they're doing now. The fact that consumer prices declined during the depression was healthy and beneficial for the economy. Had the government prevented consumer prices from falling, the Great Depression would have been a lot worse than it was. And you know, the idea that falling consumer prices is somehow, you know, evil, bad, and the government has to stop experiencing the pain of a lower cost of living is complete and utter nonsense. There's nothing wrong with more affordable food, with more affordable energy, with more affordable health care, more affordable education, more affordable clothing. All that is positive. That's what an economy is supposed to deliver. It's supposed to deliver more, less money. But the government wants to interfere with that in the name of progress? No, that's complete nonsense. What the government is trying to do is blow a smokescreen to hide its true purpose and its true intent. Wipe government debt, to bail out politicians, to inflate asset bubbles, and all of this undermines real economic growth.
They know that if home prices decline on any real basis, they're going to lose hundreds of billions in municipal and federal income because real estate taxes and related sales taxes, revenue base.
Think about the long-term consequences of keeping the cost of shelter artificially high. I mean, we all need shelter. And the goal of the government now is to keep real estate prices nobody can afford, so that people have to borrow money they can't possibly repay to pay these inflated home prices. That is hurting the economy. Because, you know, everybody is now loaded up with debt to buy houses that are overpriced. If the government simply got out of the way and let the price of shelter go down, more American families could afford to buy houses without taking on all this debt. So it's a vicious cycle which actually backfires. But they're trying to from having to admit that they have bad loans, that they loan people more money than they can repay, and they don't have enough collateral on those loans.
Those at the top have the vested interest in the hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars worth on their portfolios of these low-priced properties that they purchased that have appreciated in value. If that suddenly started to implode, you know, it would hurt their bottom line and their investors.
You know, what we have to do that hurts the economy so that we destroy real jobs and real incomes. And so we keep having real estate prices go up, but affordability go down, because at the same time we're propping up real estate prices, we're suppressing real wages because we're undermining capital investment that would grow wages. So the population is getting poorer and poorer, yet expected to buy more and more expensive houses. And the only way we can bridge the gap between falling incomes and rising home prices is to convince people to borrow even more money. And how do we do that? Well, we just have to keep interest rates as low as possible, so people can service the debts that they can't possibly repay. But we know this has to end in misery. They cannot keep this thing going forever. The longer they postpone it because they don't want to deal with the problem, the bigger the problem gets and the more expensive and disruptive it's going to be when we ultimately have to pay the piper, because the piper has to be paid.
I'd like to shift over, though, to the precious metals market. This time last year, you were on the show, and we both were stunned, I think, or at least pleased, by the amazing rally that had occurred at the beginning of 2014. Well, fast forward to today, we've also had a somewhat similar rebound off of the lows, at least the beginning of this year. Do you expect this year to end better than the miserable year we had last year for metals investors?
Yeah. Well, remember, last year got off to a very strong start. The market rallied through March and then turned around. This time so far, the rally has already fizzled out. The whole rally was in January, and we've given up almost all of the gains of 2015 already. The real catalyst for the decline was the last jobs number that was better than expected. But, you know, that number is very backward-looking. All the forward-looking indicators are horrible, and they suggest that the job gains of the past are history. And what we're looking for is a lot of job losses in 2015, and people just haven't put two and two together. And they're ignoring all the other bad economic data that's come out since that jobs report that would suggest that these jobs are not here to stay. Plus, the problem with these jobs is this problem that we've had all the last couple of years is that a lot of them are low-paying, part-time, temporary jobs. That is the story of job creation in the United States. It's about destroying full-time jobs and replacing them with a larger quantity of part-time jobs. So the net number of jobs is increasing, but the quality is collapsing, and the ability of people to actually afford to buy things with their paychecks is imploding because paychecks are smaller because they're working fewer hours. And everybody who's just looking at the numbers, again, they're ignoring what's really going on beneath the surface, which is the true story, and it's a much bleaker pitch than the sunny one that everybody's been clinging to. But I think when people realize that the economy is weak, that the Fed is not the only central bank that's not in the easing parade, that we're going to lead that parade, that we're not going to raise interest rates like everybody thinks, that the Fed is going to do QE and more QE and for longer than Europe or Japan or anybody else, then the dollar's fortunes are going to turn. And with it, the price of gold in U.S. dollars will rise sharply.
Put Fed profligacy and QE and stimulus in abeyance for a moment and turn and look outside of our shores. For every one percentage point that real rates differ from around 2%, gold, according to Gibson's paradox, has a tendency to move many fold higher each year, 8% or more. And we're seeing negative real rates all over Europe. Just this week, Sweden announced they're going negative. I believe Denmark is also negative or going negative. In the European Union, one of their benchmark rates is currently slightly negative. A perfect world scenario outside of our shores for gold.
Yeah, in fact, you know, some of the countries that are in the best shape are the ones that are turning their rates negative simply because of the supposed fear of deflation, because countries that are in better shape are rewarded with a stronger currency, and that stronger currency rewards their consumers with a lower cost of living, right? They don't have as much inflation. But now the politicians are reacting to a lack of inflation as if it's a terrible thing. And they're all panicking and they're thinking, oh, we need to create inflation, because they think inflation is what you need to get economic growth. They're afraid if they don't have inflation, their economies will slip into recession. But what all these central banks are doing is letting this inflation set. The one thing central banks will succeed at doing, they're not going to grow the economy, they're not going to create real jobs, but they will create consumer price inflation. At the end of the day, prices as for everything we need all around the world, and contrary to what the central bankers are promising, ain't going to be good news. So much debt was created to engender all the inflation that we won't be able to afford to pay the interest on that debt when we have to raise rates up to contain the inflationary fire that we lit, to stop it from burning hotter and hotter and hotter. And if the central banks have to surrender to inflation, and certainly one central bank that has to is the Fed, because we can't afford to raise interest rates really under any circumstances by any meaningful amount. when people start to realize what's going to happen to the value of their currency, that it's, you know, that if they save their money, it's going to collapse in value, and they're going to be in a rush to get it into something that will preserve its value, what can they buy? Gold is it, right? And they're going to be doing it, it's going to be a stampede to the gold market when people figure out how this central bank game is going to end.
But what do you say, though, to detractors who claim that the $quadrillion of notional derivatives out there, much of which is interest rate sensitive? Crude oil, I think it's the textbook example. We have this massive derivatives unwinding as a result of the crude oil plunge.
But the only reason I think that crude oil has dropped, everybody expects the Fed to raise rates, and then that's not going to happen. Right? People think that the Fed's going to turn off the monetary spigot, and so the market's preparing for that, but they're about to open them up wider than ever. And, you know, all the people that are out there that are going to try to say, oh, you know, people like Peter Schiff have been saying that all this money printing is going to lead to all this price inflation, and it hasn't happened, so they're wrong. Well, you know, all the people who have claimed that all this money printing was to lead to great economic growth and prosperity, that hasn't happened yet either. You know, they've been printing and printing and doing QE, and the problems keep getting worse all around the world. How are they supposed to claim success when they haven't, the policy hasn't delivered the benefits that were promised? I just think we need more time. Ultimately, as money fails to revive economic growth, money printing, they're going to keep printing more and more and more. And ultimately, the consumer price increases that we've been talking about are going to happen. And they're going to happen even greater because so much more money was printed over such a longer time period.
Well, switching to U.S. equities before we wrap up here, you know, it's been one of the asset classes for several years running the go-to asset class. The NASDAQ nearing dot-com era, you know, the 5,000 level where it peaked back there 15 years ago. The Dow's at 117-year highs regularly. Do you see this year as another banner year for equities investors? And if not, why?
It's hard to say because there's going to be counterbalance forces that are going to come into play. The fact that I believe the Fed is going to do more QE is supportive of stock prices. But the fact that they're going to have to do it because the economy is weak and corporate earnings are going to be less than expected, that is a negative factor. So stock traders are going to have to, you know, they'll be torn between those two realities, earnings and the economy not being as strong as they thought, but monetary policy being easier than they thought. So I don't think in that environment you're going to get a crash in the stock market. But I don't know how much headway it's going to make. I think certainly gold should outperform the stock market considerably in 2015, especially if I'm correct in the launching of QE4. But, you know, and I think the U.S. stock market will underperform foreign markets because I think the dollar will really get clobbered if the Fed is forced to unleash a QE4. So, but the actual nominal price of U.S. stocks is part of the Federal Reserve did the right thing. If they actually stopped QE and normalized interest rates, the market would crash. There's no question in my mind that we'd crash, at least 50%, maybe more. But that's one of the reasons why the Fed won't do it, because the phony recovery that they created is built on the pillars of asset bubbles. It's built on the wealth effect associated with a rising stock market or a rising real estate market. So the Fed cannot afford to allow those pillars to crumble. It's got to do whatever it can to solidify them. And the only thing it can do is more of what it did in the first place, which is quantitative easing and keeping rates at zero.
What do you say to investors are simply waiting on the sidelines, waiting for that rate hike announcement, you know, the capitulation moment to kind of clear the brush out of the forest, and then we see a rally in the precious metals and a final bottom?
I mean, the problem is we could be waiting for a long time. You know, it could be like waiting for the Fed to raise rates, because they may never do it. They'll talk about it a lot, and that's, you know, what they want to do. Talk is cheap because they want to pretend that the U.S. economy can actually withstand a rate hike. The last thing they want to admit is that they can't do it. But, you know, one of the things the Fed would like to be able to do is raise interest rates so that when we have the next recession, they can cut them again. But I don't know if the Fed is going to have that ability, because I think we can start the next recession if the Fed begins to raise rates at all. And you don't want to start a recession when rates are at 25 basis points or 50 basis points, because you don't have a lot of room. So I think the Fed is most likely going to try to kick the can down the road as long as possible by not actually raising rates, just talking about the possibility of doing it in the future.
But tell us, though, as far as your outlook on the precious metals equities, you know, they've also struggled and had a remarkable rebound this year, outpacing the underlying bullion itself. Give us an idea of what you're seeing here.
Yeah, well, mining stocks have benefited from the reduction in the cost of mining, because even though the price of gold hasn't gone up that much in U.S. dollar terms now, it's gone up quite a bit in terms of the currencies where the bullion is mined. And so what that means is the wages are down for what they have to pay the miners. You know, so their profit margins are higher. Plus, gold mining involves a lot of energy, and so the cost of energy has gone down considerably. And you know, gold companies have reduced somewhat their production costs last year, trying to adjust to a lower gold price environment. So mining is more profitable than it was. Plus, gold mining stocks have dropped considerably, much more than the precious metal. In fact, if you look at some of the mining companies in terms of their local currency prices, right, what are they priced at in Canadian dollars or Australian dollars? You know, these stocks, many of them are still down 50, 60, 70% or more from their highs a few years ago, yet the price of gold in those currencies is only off maybe 10 to 15% from its record highs in those currencies. So you have a huge decline in mining companies relative to the decline in the price of gold. And again, you've had this big relief with falling energy prices. So there is a good story there, a good value story in the mining stocks. So I think they are more resilient for a reason. And I do expect prices of gold mining stocks to go up a lot, particularly if I'm right on QE and gold. And then, that's one of the reasons, the main reason I launched the Euro Pacific Gold Fund, which I would encourage people who are interested in precious metals and can, tolerate some risk, because you're buying mining companies, to take a look at the Euro Pacific Gold Fund. It's EPGFX is the ticker symbol. You know, you can buy it with Euro Pacific brokers. You can buy it at other, Fidelity or Schwab. Our fund is co-managed by Adrian Day. But I think we've built a really good portfolio. We've got a lot of the smaller companies, which are hard to pick on your own. It's hard to know which are the best ones to own. But I think it is a, really a perfect storm in a good way for the gold mining stocks. You just got to be a little bit patient to wait it out. But I think the rewards will be pretty big. Well, SIP Gold is Europac Precious Metals. I've been in the metals business for years now. We just changed the name of the company. But for people who want to, have physical precious metals that they have, in their own possession, that's going to be delivered to their doorstep. They could store party. They should contact Gold. The real reason I started to the company was because so many other companies in the industry were ripping off their customers by overcharging them for, collectible coins or things like that. And we don't do that. I mean, we have very, very fair pricing. It's hard to even find anybody who can beat my pricing, even if you're just ordering online at very, very good prices. And we've got salesmen that aren't going to try to rip you off, because I won't let them. That's not my business model. It's not a bait and switch type of thing. We sell bullion coins and bars. That's what we market, and that's all we sell. And we do it at a competitive price.
Very good. Peter Schiff, we want to thank you today for your time.
Thanks a lot.
Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.